Sir McGonagall angry on several occasions, but either he had forgotten just how thin her mouth could go, or he had never seen her this angry before. She raised her wand the moment she entered. Harry and Ron both flinched, but she merely pointed it at the empty fireplace where flames suddenly erupted.
"Sit,"
she said, and they both backed into chairs by the fire.
"Explain,"
she said, her glances glinting ominously. Ron launched into the story, starting with the barrier at the station, refusing to let them through.
"So we had no choice, Professor. We couldn't get on the train." "Why didn't you send us a letter by owl? I believe you have an owl,"
Professor McGonagall said coldly to Harry. Harry gaped at her. Now she said it, that seemed the obvious thing to have done.
I didn't think.
"That," said Professor McGonagall, "is obvious." There was a knock at the office door, and Snape, now looking happier than ever, opened it. There stood the headmaster, Professor Dumbledore. Harry's whole body went numb. Dumbledore was looking unusually grave. He stared down his very crooked nose at them, and Harry suddenly found himself wishing he and Ron were still being beaten up by the Whomping Willow. There was a long silence. Then Dumbledore said,
"Please explain why you did this."
It would have been better if he had shouted. Harry hated the disappointment in his voice. For some reason he was unable to look Dumbledore in the eyes, and spoke instead to his knees. He told Dumbledore everything, except that Mr. Weasley owned the bewitched car, making it sound as though he and Ron had happened to find a flying car parked outside the station. He knew Dumbledore would see through this at once, but Dumbledore asked no questions about the car. When Harry had finished, he merely continued to peer at them through his spectacles.
"We'll go and get our stuff," said Ron in a hopeless sort of voice.
"What are you talking about, Weasley?"
barked Professor McGonagall.
"Well, you're expelling us, aren't you?" said Ron.
Harry looked quickly at Dumbledore.
"Not today, Mr. Weasley," said Dumbledore, "but I must impress upon both of you the seriousness of what you have done. I will be writing to both your families tonight. I must also warn you that if you do anything like this again, I will have no choice but to expel you."
Snape looked as though Christmas had been cancelled. He cleared his throat and said,
"Professor Dumbledore, these boys have flouted the degree for the restriction of underage wizardry, caused serious damage to an old and valuable tree. Surely acts of this nature..." "It will be for Professor McGonagall to decide on these boys' punishments, Severus," said Dumbledore calmly. "They are in her house, and therefore her responsibility."
He turned to Professor McGonagall.
"I must go back to the feast, Minerva. I've got to give out a few notices. Come, Severus, there's a delicious-looking custard tart I want to sample."
Snape shot a look of pure venom at Harry and Ron as he allowed himself to be swept out of his office, leaving them alone with Professor McGonagall, who was still eyeing them like a wrathful eagle.
"You'd better get along to the hospital wing, Weasley. You're bleeding."
"Not much," said Ron, hastily wiping the cut over his eye with his sleeve. "Professor, I wanted to watch my sister being sorted."
"The sorting ceremony is over," said Professor McGonagall. "Your sister is also in Gryffindor."
"Oh, good," said Ron.
"And speaking of Gryffindor," Professor McGonagall said sharply, but Harry cut in,
"Professor, when we took the car, term hadn't started, so Gryffindor shouldn't really have points taken from it, should it?"
he finished, watching her anxiously. Professor McGonagall gave him a piercing look, but he was sure she had almost smiled. Her mouth looked less thin, anyway.
"I will not take any points from Gryffindor," she said, and Harry's heart lightened considerably. "But you will both get a detention."
It was better than Harry had expected. As for Dumbledore's writing to the Dursleys, that was nothing. Harry knew perfectly well they'd just be disappointed that the Whomping Willow hadn't squashed him flat. Professor McGonagall raised her wand again and pointed it at Snape's desk. A large plate of sandwiches, two silver goblets, and a jug of iced pumpkin juice appeared with a pop.
You will eat in here, and then go straight up to your dormitory, she said. I must also return to the feast.
When the door had closed behind her, Ron let out a long, low whistle.
I thought we'd had it, he said, grabbing a sandwich.
So did I,
said Harry, taking one too.
Can you believe our luck, though? Said Ron thickly through a mouthful of chicken and ham. Fred and George must have flown that car 5 or 6 times, and no muggle ever saw them.
He swallowed and took another huge bite.
Why couldn't we get through the barrier?
Harry shrugged.
We'll have to watch our step from now on, though, he said, taking a grateful swig of pumpkin juice. Wish we could have gone up to the feast.
She didn't want us showing off, said Ron sagely. Doesn't want people to think it's clever, arriving by flying car.
When they had eaten as many sandwiches as they could, the plate kept refilling itself, they rose and left the office, treading the familiar path to Gryffindor Tower. The castle was quiet. It seemed that the feast was over. They walked past muttering portraits and creaking suits of armor and climbed narrow flights of stone stairs until at last they reached the passage where the secret entrance to Gryffindor Tower was hidden, behind an oil painting of a very fat woman in a pink silk dress.
Password,
she said as they approached.
Said Harry.
They didn't know the New Year's password, not having met a Gryffindor prefect yet. But help came almost immediately. They heard hurrying feet behind them and turned to see Hermione dashing towards them.
There you are! Where have you been? The most ridiculous rumors. Someone said you'd been expelled for crashing a flying car.
Well, we haven't been expelled, Harry assured her.
You're not telling me you did fly here,
said Hermione, sounding almost as severe as Professor McGonagall.
Skip the lecture, said Ron impatiently, and tell us the new password.
It's Mottlebird, said Hermione impatiently, but that's not the point.
Her words were cut short, however, as the portrait of the fat lady swung open, and there was a sudden storm of clapping. It looked as though the whole of Gryffindor House was still awake, packed into the circular common room, standing on the lopsided tables and squashy armchairs, waiting for them to arrive. Arms reached through the portrait hole to pull Harry and Ron inside, leaving Hermione to scramble in after them.
Brilliant, yelled Lee Jordan. Inspired. What an entrance. Flying a car right into the Whomping Willow. People will be talking about that one for years.
Good for you,
said a fifth year Harry had never spoken to. Someone was patting him on the back as though he'd just won a marathon. Fred and George pushed their way to the front of the crowd and said together,
Why couldn't we have come in the car, eh?
Ron was scarlet in the face, grinning embarrassedly. But Harry could see one person who didn't look happy at all. Percy was visible over the heads of some excited first years, and he seemed to be trying to get near enough to start telling them off. Harry nudged Ron in the ribs and nodded in Percy's direction. Ron got the point at once.
Got to get upstairs. Bit tired, he said,
and the two of them started pushing their way toward the door on the other side of the room, which led to a spiral staircase and the dormitories.
Night!
Harry called back to Hermione, who was wearing a scowl just like Percy's. They managed to get to the other side of the common room, still having their backs slapped, and gained the peace of the staircase. They hurried up it right to the top, and at last reached the door of their old dormitory, which now had a sign on it saying, Second Years. They entered the familiar circular room, with its 5 four-posters hung with red velvet and its high, narrow windows. Their trunks had been brought up for them and stood at the ends of their beds. Ron grinned guiltily at Harry.
I know I shouldn't have enjoyed that or anything, but...
The dormitory door flew open and in came the other second-year Gryffindor boys, Seamus Finnegan, Dean Thomas and Neville Longbottom.
Unbelievable,
beamed Seamus. Cool, said Dean. Amazing, said Neville, awestruck.
Harry couldn't help it. He grinned too. Chapter 6. Gilderoy Lockhart. The next day, however, Harry barely grinned once. Things started to go downhill from breakfast in the Great Hall. The 4 longhouse tables were laden with tureens of porridge, plates of kippers, mountains of toast, and dishes of eggs and bacon beneath the enchanted ceiling, today a dull cloudy grey. Harry and Ron sat down at the Gryffindor table next to Hermione, who had her copy of Voyages with Vampires propped open against a milk jug. There was a slight stiffness in the way she said, "Morning," which told Harry that she was still disapproving of the way they had arrived. Neville Longbottom, on the other hand, greeted them cheerfully. Neville was a round-faced, an accident-prone boy, with the worst memory of anyone Harry had ever met.
"Mail's due any minute. I think Gran's sending a few things I forgot."
Harry had only just started his porridge when, sure enough, there was a rushing sound overhead, and 100 or so owls streamed in, circling the hall and dropping letters and packages into the chattering crowd. A big, lumpy package bounced off Neville's head, and a second later something large and grey fell into Hermione's jug, spraying them all with milk and feathers.
"Errol,"
said Ron, pulling the bedraggled owl out by the feet. Errol slumped, unconscious, onto the table, his legs in the air and a damp red envelope in his beak.
"Oh, no," Ron gasped. "It's all right, he's still alive,"
said Hermione, prodding Errol gently with the tip of her finger.
"It's not that. It's that."
Ron was pointing at the red envelope. It looked quite ordinary to Harry, but Ron and Neville were both looking at it as though they expected it to explode.
"What's the matter?"
said Harry.
She sent me a howler," said Ron faintly. "You'd better open it, Ron," said Neville in a timid whisper. "It'll be worse if you don't. My gran sent me one once, and I ignored it, and," he gulped, "it was horrible."
Harry looked from their petrified faces to the red envelope.
"What's a howler?"
he said. But Ron's whole attention was fixed on the letter, which had begun to smoke at the corners.
"Open it,"
Neville urged.
"It'll all be over in a few minutes."
Ron stretched out a shaking hand, eased the envelope from Errol's beak, and slit it open. Neville stuffed his fingers in his ears. A split second later, Harry knew why. He thought for a moment it had exploded.
A roar of sound filled the huge hall, shaking dust from the ceiling. "Stealing the car! I wouldn't have been surprised if they'd expelled you. You wait till I get hold of you. I don't suppose you stopped to think what your father and I went through when we saw it was gone."
Mrs. Weasley's yells, 100 times louder than usual, made the plates and spoons rattle on the table and echoed deafeningly off the stone walls. People throughout the hall were swiveling around to see who had received the howler, and Ron sank so low in his chair that only his crimson forehead could be seen.
"Letter from Dumbledore last night. I thought your father would die of shame. We didn't bring you up to behave like this. You and Harry could both have died."
Harry had been wondering when his name was going to crop up. He tried very hard to look as though he couldn't hear the voice that was making his eardrums throb.
"Absolutely disgusted. Your father's facing an inquiry at work. It's entirely your fault, and if you put another toe out of line, we'll bring you straight back home."
A ringing silence fell. The red envelope, which had dropped from Ron's hand, burst into flames and curled into ashes. Harry and Ron sat stunned, as though a tidal wave had just passed over them. A few people laughed, and gradually a babble of talk broke out again. Hermione closed Voyages with Vampires and looked down at the top of Ron's head.
"Well, I don't know what you expected, Ron, but you..."
"Don't tell me I deserved it," snapped Ron. Harry pushed his porridge away. His insides were burning with guilt. Mr. Weasley was facing an inquiry at work, after all Mr. and Mrs. Weasley had done for him over the summer. But he had no time to dwell on this. Professor McGonagall was moving along the Gryffindor table, handing out course schedules. Harry took his and saw that they had double herbology with the Hufflepuffs first. Harry, Ron, and Hermione left the castle together, crossed the vegetable patch, and made for the greenhouses where the magical plants were kept. At least the howler had done one good thing. Hermione seemed to think that they had now been punished enough and was being perfectly friendly again. As they neared the greenhouses, they saw the rest of the class standing outside waiting for Professor Sprout. Harry, Ron, and Hermione had only just joined them when she came striding into view across the lawn, accompanied by Gilderoy Lockhart. Professor Sprout's arms were full of bandages, and with another twinge of guilt, Harry spotted the whomping willow in the distance, several of its branches now in slings. Professor Sprout was a squat little witch who wore a patched hat over her flyaway hair. There was usually a large amount of earth on her clothes, and her fingernails would have made Aunt Petunia faint.
Gilderoy Lockhart, however, was immaculate in sweeping robes of turquoise, his golden hair shining under a perfectly positioned turquoise hat with gold trimming.
"Oh, hello there,"
he called, beaming around at the assembled students. "Just been showing Professor Sprout the right way to doctor a whomping willow, but I don't want you running away with the idea that I'm better at herbology than she is. I just happen to have met several of these exotic plants on my travels."
"Greenhouse tree today, chaps,"
said Professor Sprout, who was looking distinctly disgruntled, not at all her usual cheerful self. There was a murmur of interest. They had only ever worked in Greenhouse 1 before. Greenhouse 3 housed far more interesting and dangerous plants. Professor Sprout took a large key from her belt and unlocked the door. Harry caught a whiff of damp earth and fertilizer mingling with the heavy perfume of some giant umbrella-sized flowers dangling from the ceiling. He was about to follow Ron and Hermione inside when Lockhart's hand shot out.
"Harry, I've been wanting a word. You don't mind if he's a couple of minutes late, do you, Professor Sprout?"
Judging by Professor Sprout's scowl, she did mind, but Lockhart said,
"That's the ticket,"
and closed the greenhouse door in her face.
"Harry," said Lockhart, his large white teeth gleaming in the sunlight as he shook his head. "Harry, Harry, Harry."
Completely nonplussed, Harry said nothing.
"When I heard, well, of course, it was all my fault. Could have kicked myself."
Harry had no idea what he was talking about. He was about to say so when Lockhart went on.
"Don't know when I've been more shocked. Flying a car to Hogwarts? Well, of course, I knew at once why you'd done it. Stood out a mile. Harry, Harry, Harry."
It was remarkable how he could show every one of those brilliant teeth, even when he wasn't talking.
"Gave you a taste for publicity, didn't I?" said Lockhart. "Gave you the bug. You got onto the front page of the paper with me, and you couldn't wait to do it again."
"Oh, no, Professor. See, Harry, Harry, Harry," said Lockhart, reaching out and grasping his shoulder.
"I understand. Natural to want a bit more once you've had that first taste. And I blame myself for giving you that, because it was bound to go to your head. But see here, young man, you can't start flying cars to try and get yourself noticed. Just calm down, all right? Plenty of time for all that when you're older, yes? Yes, I know what you're thinking. It's all right for him. He's an internationally famous wizard already. But when I was 12, I was just as much of a nobody as you are now. In fact, I'd say I was even more of a nobody. I mean, a few people have heard of you, haven't they? All that business with he who must not be named."
He glanced at the lightning scar on Harry's forehead.
I know, it's not quite as good as winning Which Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award 5 times in a row, as I have. But it's a start, Harry. It's a start."
He gave Harry a hearty wink and strode off. Harry stood stunned for a few seconds, then, remembering he was supposed to be in the greenhouse, he opened the door and slid inside. Professor Sprout was standing behind a trestle bench in the center of the greenhouse. About 20 pairs of different colored earmuffs were lying on the bench. When Harry had taken his place between Ron and Hermione, she said,
"We'll be repotting mandrakes today. Now who can tell me the properties of the mandrake?"
To nobody's surprise, Hermione's hand was first into the air.
"Mandrake, or mandragora, is a powerful restorative,"
said Hermione, sounding as usual as though she had swallowed the textbook.
"It is used to return people who have been transfigured or cursed to their original state."
"Excellent. 10 points to Gryffindor,"
said Professor Sprout.
"The mandrake forms an essential part of most antidotes. It is also, however, dangerous. Who can tell me why?"
Hermione's hand narrowly missed Harry's glasses as it shot up again.
"The cry of the mandrake is fatal to anyone who hears it,"
she said promptly.
"Precisely. Take another 10 points, said Professor Sprout.
Now, the mandrakes we have here are still very young.
She pointed to a row of deep trays as she spoke, and everyone shuffled forward for a better look. 100 or so tufty little plants, purplish-green in colour, were growing there in rows. They looked quite unremarkable to Harry, who didn't have the slightest idea what Hermione meant by the cry of the mandrake.
"Everyone take a pair of earmuffs," said Professor Sprout.
There was a scramble as everyone tried to seize a pair that wasn't pink and fluffy.
"When I tell you to put them on, make sure your ears are completely covered," said Professor Sprout. "When it is safe to remove them, I will give you the thumbs up, right? Earmuffs on."
Harry snapped the earmuffs over his ears. They shut out sound completely. Professor Sprout put the pink, fluffy pair over her own ears, rolled up the sleeves of her robes, grasped one of the tufty plants firmly, and pulled hard. Harry let out a gasp of surprise that no one could hear. Instead of roots, a small, muddy, and extremely ugly baby popped out of the earth. The leaves were growing right out of his head. He had pale, green, mottled skin, and was clearly bawling at the top of his lungs. Professor Sprout took a large plant pot from under the table and plunged the mandrake into it, burying him in dark, dark compost until only the tufted leaves were visible. Professor Sprout dusted off her hands, gave them all the thumbs up, and removed her own earmuffs.
"As our mandrakes are only seedlings, their cries won't kill yet,"
she said calmly, as though she'd just done nothing more exciting than water a begonia.
"However, they will knock you out for several hours, and as I'm sure none of you want to miss your first day back, make sure your earmuffs are securely in place while you work. I will attract your attention when it is time to pack up. 4 to a tray. There is a large supply of pots here. Compost in the sacks over there, and be careful of the venomous tentacula. It's teething."
She gave a sharp slap to a spiky dark red plant as she spoke, making it draw in the long feelers that had been inching sneakily over her shoulder. Harry, Ron, and Hermione were joined at their tray by a curly-haired Hufflepuff boy Harry knew by sight but had never spoken to.
"Justin Finch Fletchley," he said brightly, shaking Harry by the hand. "Know who you are, of course. The famous Harry Potter. And you're Hermione Granger, always topping everything."
Hermione beamed as she had her hand shaken too.
"And Ron Weasley. Wasn't that your flying car?"
Ron didn't smile. The Howler was obviously still on his mind.
"That Lockhart's something, isn't he?"
said Justin happily as they began filling their plant pots with dragon dung compost.
"Awfully brave chap. Have you read his books? I'd have died of fear if I'd been cornered in a telephone booth by a werewolf, but he stayed cool and zap, just fantastic. My name was down for Eton, you know. I can't tell you how glad I am I came here instead. Of course, Mother was slightly disappointed, but since I made her read Lockhart's books, I think she's begun to see how useful it'll be to have a fully trained wizard in the family."
After that, they didn't have much chance to talk. Their earmuffs were back on and they needed to concentrate on the mandrakes. Professor Sprout had made it look extremely easy, but it wasn't. The mandrakes didn't like coming out of the earth, but didn't seem to want to go back into it either. They squirmed, kicked, flailed their sharp little fists, and gnashed their teeth. Harry spent 10 whole minutes trying to squash a particularly fat one into a pot. By the end of the class, Harry, like everyone else, was sweaty, aching, and covered in earth. Everyone traipsed back to the castle for a quick wash, and then the Gryffindors hurried off to Transfiguration. Professor McGonagall's classes were always hard work, but today was especially difficult. Everything Harry had learnt last year seemed to have leaked out of his head during the summer. He was supposed to be turning a beetle into a button, but all he managed to do was give his beetle a lot of exercise as it scuttled over the desktop, avoiding his wand. Ron was having far worse problems. He had patched up his wand with some borrowed spellotape, but it seemed to be damaged beyond repair. It kept crackling and sparking at odd moments, and every time Ron tried to transfigure his beetle, it engulfed him in thick grey smoke that smelled of rotten eggs. Unable to see what he was doing, Ron accidentally squashed his beetle with his elbow and had to ask for a new one. Professor McGonagall wasn't pleased.
Harry was relieved to hear the lunch bell. His brain felt like a wrung sponge. Everyone filed out of the classroom except him and Ron, who was whacking his wand furiously on the desk.
Stupid, useless thing!
Right home for another one, Harry suggested, as the wand let off a volley of bangs like a firecracker.
Oh, yeah, and get another howler back, said Ron, stuffing the now hissing wand into his bag.
It's your own fault your wand got snapped.
They went down to lunch, where Ron's mood was not improved by Hermione's showing them the handful of perfect coat buttons she had produced in Transfiguration.
What have we got
this afternoon? Said Harry, hastily changing the subject.
Defense against the dark arts, said Hermione at once.
Why, demanded Ron, seizing her schedule, have you outlined all Lockhart's lessons in Little Hearts?
Hermione snatched the schedule back, blushing furiously.
They finished lunch and went outside into the overcast courtyard. Hermione sat down on a stone step and buried her nose in Voyages with Vampires again. Harry and Ron stood talking about Quidditch for several minutes before Harry became aware that he was being closely watched. Looking up, he saw the very small, mousy-haired boy he'd seen trying on the sorting hat last night, staring at Harry as though transfixed. He was clutching what looked like an ordinary Muggle camera, and the moment Harry looked at him, he went bright red.
All right, Harry. I'm Colin Creevy,
he said breathlessly, taking a tentative step forward.
I'm in Gryffindor too. Do you think, would it be all right if... Can I have a picture?
He said, raising the camera hopefully.
A picture?
Harry repeated blankly.
So I can prove I've met you, said Colin Creevy eagerly, edging further forward. I know all about you. Everyone's told me about how you survived when you-know-who tried to kill you, and how he disappeared and everything, and how you've still got a lightning scar on your forehead.
His eyes raked Harry's hairline.
And a boy in my dormitory said, if I develop the film in the right potion, the pictures will move.
Colin drew a great shuddering breath of excitement and said,
it's amazing here, isn't it? I never knew all the odd stuff I could do was magic till I got the letter from Hogwarts. My dad's a milkman. He couldn't believe it either. So I'm taking loads of pictures to send home to him. And it'd be really good if I had one of you.
He looked imploringly at Harry.
Maybe your friend could take it and I could stand next to you. And then, could you sign it?
Signed photos? You're giving out signed photos, Potter.
Loud and scathing, Draco Malfoy's voice echoed round the courtyard. He had stopped right behind Colin, flanked as he always was at Hogwarts by his large and thuggish cronies, Crabbe and Goyle.
Everyone line up, Malfoy roared to the crowd. Harry Potter's giving out signed photos.
No, I'm not,
said Harry angrily, his fists clenching.
Shut up, Malfoy. You're just jealous,
piped up Colin, whose entire body was about as thick as Crabbe's neck.
Jealous?
Said Malfoy, who didn't need to shout any more. Half the courtyard was listening in.
Of what? I don't want a foul scar right across my head, thanks. I don't think getting your head cut open makes you that special myself.
Crabbe and Goyle were sniggering stupidly.
Eat slugs, Malfoy, said Ron angrily.
Crabbe stopped laughing and started rubbing his knuckles in a menacing way.
Be careful, Weasley, sneered Malfoy. You don't want to start any trouble, or your mummy'll have to come and take you away from school.
He put on a shrill, piercing voice.
If you put another toe out of line...
A knot of Slytherin 5 years nearby laughed loudly at this.
Weasley would like a signed photo, Potter, smirked Malfoy. It'd be worth more than his family's whole house.
Ron whipped out his spellotaped wand, but Hermione shut Voyages with Vampires with a snap and whispered,
Look out!
What's all this? What's all this?
Gilderoy Lockhart was striding toward them, his turquoise robe swirling behind him.
Who's giving out signed photos?
Harry started to speak, but he was cut short as Lockhart flung an arm around his shoulders and thundered jovially,
Shouldn't have asked. We meet again, Harry.
Pinned to Lockhart's side and burning with humiliation, Harry saw Malfoy slide smirking back into the crowd.
Come on then, Mr. Creevy, said Lockhart, beaming at Colin. A double portrait. Can't do better than that, and we'll both sign it for you.
Colin fumbled for his camera and took the picture as the bell rang behind them, signaling the start of afternoon classes.
"Off you go. Move along there," Lockhart called to the crowd,
and he set off back to the castle with Harry, who was wishing he knew a good vanishing spell, still clasped to his side.
"A word to the wise, Harry," said Lockhart paternally as they entered the building through a side door. "I covered up for you back there with young Creevy. If he was photographing me too, your schoolmates won't think you're setting yourself up so much."
Deaf to Harry's stammers, Lockhart swept him down a corridor lined with staring students and up a staircase.
"Let me just say that handing out signed pictures at this stage of your career isn't sensible. Looks a tad big-headed, Harry. To be frank, there may well come a time when, like me, you need to keep a stack handy wherever you go, but," he gave a little chortle, "I don't think you're quite there yet."
They had reached Lockhart's classroom, and he let Harry go at last. Harry yanked his robe straight and headed for a seat at the very back of the class, where he busied himself with piling all seven of Lockhart's books in front of him so that he could avoid looking at the real thing. The rest of the class came clattering in, and Ron and Hermione sat down on either side of Harry.
"You could have fried an egg on your face," said Ron.
"You'd better hope Creevy doesn't meet Ginny, or they'll be starting a Harry Potter fan club."
"Shut up," snapped Harry.
The last thing he needed was for Lockhart to hear the phrase, "Harry Potter fan club." When the whole class was seated, Lockhart cleared his throat loudly, and silence fell. He reached forward, picked up Neville Longbottom's copy of Travels with Trolls, and held it up to show his own winking portrait on the front.
"Me," he said, pointing at it and winking as well. "Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, third class, honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League, and five-time winner of Witch Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award. But I don't talk about that. I didn't get rid of the abandoned banshee by smiling at her."
He waited for them to laugh. A few people smiled weakly.
"I see you've all bought a complete set of my books. Well done. I thought we'd start today with a little quiz. Nothing to worry about, just to check how well you've read them, how much you've taken in."
When he had handed out the test papers, he returned to the front of the class and said, "You have 30 minutes. Start now." Harry looked down at his paper and read, 1. What is Gilderoy Lockhart's favorite color? 2. What is Gilderoy Lockhart's secret ambition? 3. What, in your opinion, is Gilderoy Lockhart's greatest achievement to date? On and on it went, over 3 sides of paper, right down to 54. When is Gilderoy Lockhart's birthday, and what would his ideal gift be? Half an hour later, Lockhart collected the papers and rifled through them in front of the class.
"Tut, tut, hardly any of you remember that my favorite color is lilac. I say so in Year with the Yeti. And a few of you need to read Wanderings with Werewolves more carefully. I clearly state in Chapter 12 that my ideal birthday gift would be harmony between all magic and non-magic peoples, though I wouldn't say no to a large bottle of Ogden's old fire whiskey."
He gave them another roguish wink. Ron was now staring at Lockhart with an expression of disbelief on his face. Seamus Finnegan and Dean Thomas, who were sitting in front, were shaking with silent laughter. Hermione, on the other hand, was listening to Lockhart with rapt attention and gave a start when he mentioned her name.
"But Miss Hermione Granger knew my secret ambition is to rid the world of evil and market my own range of hair care potions. Good girl. In fact,"
he flipped her paper over,
"full marks. Where is Miss Hermione Granger?"
Hermione raised a trembling hand.
"Excellent," beamed Lockhart. "Quite excellent. Take 10 points for Gryffindor. So, to business."
He bent down behind his desk and lifted a large covered cage onto it.
"Now, be warned. It is my job to arm you against the foulest creatures known to wizard kind. You may find yourself facing your worst fears in this room.
Know only that no harm can befall you whilst I am here. All I ask is that you remain calm." In spite of himself, Harry leaned around his pile of books for a better look at the cage. Lockhart placed a hand on the cover. Dean and Seamus had stopped laughing now. Neville was cowering in his front row seat.
"I must ask you not to scream," said Lockhart in a low voice. "It might provoke them."
As the whole class held its breath, Lockhart whipped off the cover.
"Yes," he said dramatically, "freshly caught Cornish pixies."
Seamus Finnegan couldn't control himself. He let out a snort of laughter that even Lockhart couldn't mistake for a scream of terror.
"Yes," he smiled at Seamus. "Well, they're not very dangerous, are they?"
Seamus choked.
"Don't be so sure," said Lockhart, waggling a finger annoyingly at Seamus. "Devilish tricky little blighters they can be."
The pixies were electric blue and about 8 inches high, with pointed faces and voices so shrill it was like listening to a lot of budgies arguing. The moment the cover had been removed, they had started jabbering and rocketing around, rattling the bars and making bizarre faces at the people nearest them.
"Right, then," Lockhart said loudly. "Let's see what you make of them."
And he opened the cage. It was pandemonium. The pixies shot in every direction like rockets. Two of them seized Neville by the ears and lifted him into the air. Several shot straight through the window, showering the back row with broken glass. The rest proceeded to wreck the classroom more effectively than a rampaging rhino. They grabbed ink bottles and sprayed the class with them, shredded books and papers, tore pictures from the walls, upended the waste basket, grabbed bags and books, and threw them out of the smashed windows. Within minutes, half the class was sheltering under desks, and Neville was swinging from the iron chandelier in the ceiling.
"Come on, now! Round them up! Round them up! They're only pixies!"
Lockhart shouted. He rolled up his sleeves, brandished his wand, and bellowed,
"Pesky pixie, pestronomy!"
It had absolutely no effect. One of the pixies seized his wand and threw it out of the window, too. Lockhart gulped and dived under his own desk, narrowly avoiding being squashed by Neville, who fell a second later as the chandelier gave way. The bell rang, and there was a mad rush toward the exit. In the relative calm that followed, Lockhart straightened up, caught sight of Harry, Ron, and Hermione, who were almost at the door, and said,
"Well, I'll ask you three to just nip the rest of them back into their cage."
He swept past them, and shut the door quickly behind him.
"Can you believe him?"
roared Ron, as one of the remaining pixies bit him painfully on the ear.
"He just wants to give us some hands-on experience,"
said Hermione, immobilizing two pixies at once with a clever freezing charm, and stuffing them back into their cage.
"Hands-on?" said Harry, who was trying to grab a pixie dancing out of reach with its tongue out. "Hermione, he didn't have a clue what he was doing."
"Rubbish," said Hermione. "You've read his books. Look at all those amazing things he's done."
"He says he's done," Ron muttered.
Chapter 7, Mudbloods and Murmurs. Harry spent a lot of time over the next few days dodging out of sight whenever he saw Gilderoy Lockhart coming down a corridor. Harder to avoid was Colin Creevy, who seemed to have memorized Harry's schedule. Nothing seemed to give Colin a bigger thrill than to say,
"All right, Harry,"
6 or 7 times a day, and hear, "Hello, Colin," back, however exasperated Harry sounded when he said it. Hedwig was still angry with Harry about the disastrous car journey, and Ron's wand was still malfunctioning, surpassing itself on Friday morning by shooting out of Ron's hand in charms and hitting tiny old Professor Flitwick squarely between the eyes, creating a large, throbbing green boil where it had struck. So with one thing and another, Harry was quite glad to reach the weekend. He, Ron, and Hermione were planning to visit Hagrid on Saturday morning. Harry, however, was shaken awake several hours earlier than he would have liked by Oliver Wood, captain of the Gryffindor Quidditch team.
"What's the matter?"
said Harry groggily.
"Quidditch practice," said Wood. "Come on."
Harry squinted at the window. There was a thin mist hanging across the pink and gold sky. Now that he was awake, he couldn't understand how he could have slept through the racket the birds were making.
"Oliver,"
Harry croaked. It's the crack of dawn.
Exactly, said Wood. He was a tall and burly 6-year, and at the moment his eyes were gleaming with a crazed enthusiasm. It's part of our new training program. Come on, grab your broom and let's go, said Wood heartily. None of the other teams have started training yet. We're going to be first off the mark this year. Yawning and shivering slightly, Harry climbed out of bed and tried to find his Quidditch robes. Good man, said Wood. Meet you on the field in 15 minutes. When he'd found his scarlet team robes and pulled on his cloak for warmth, Harry scribbled a note to Ron explaining where he'd gone and went down the spiral staircase to the common room, his Nimbus 2000 on his shoulder. He had just reached the portrait hole when there was a clatter behind him, and Colin Creevy came dashing down the spiral staircase, his camera swinging madly round his neck, and something clutched in his hand.
I heard someone saying your name on the stairs, Harry. Look what I've got here. I've had it developed. I wanted to show you.
Harry looked bemusedly at the photograph Colin was brandishing under his nose. A moving black-and-white Lockhart was tugging hard on an arm Harry recognized as his own. He was pleased to see that his photographic self was putting up a good fight and refusing to be dragged into view. As Harry watched, Lockhart gave up and slumped, panting, against the white edge of the picture.
"Will you sign it?"
said Colin eagerly. "No," said Harry flatly, glancing around to check that the room was really deserted.
"Sorry, Colin, I'm in a hurry. Quidditch practice."
He climbed through the portrait hole.
"Oh, wow! Wait for me. I've never watched a Quidditch game before."
Colin scrambled through the hole after him. "It'll be really boring," Harry said quickly, but Colin ignored him, his face shining with excitement.
"You were the youngest house player in 100 years, weren't you, Harry? Weren't you?"
said Colin, trotting alongside him.
"You must be brilliant. I've never flown. Is it easy? Is that your own broom? Is that the best one there is?"
Harry didn't know how to get rid of him. It was like having an extremely talkative shadow.
"I don't really understand Quidditch," said Colin breathlessly. "Is it true there are 4 balls and 2 of them fly around trying to knock people off their brooms?"
"Yes," said Harry heavily, resigned to explaining the complicated rules of Quidditch. "They're called bludgers. There are 2 beaters on each team who carry clubs to beat the bludgers away from their side. Fred and George Weasley are the Gryffindor beaters."
"And what are the other balls for?"
Colin asked, tripping down a couple of steps because he was gazing open-mouthed at Harry. "Well, the Quaffle, that's the biggest red one, is the one that scores goals. 3 chasers on each team throw the Quaffle to each other and try and get it through the goalpost at the end of the pitch. They're 3 long poles with hoops on the end."
"And the 4th ball?"
"Is the Golden Snitch," said Harry.
"And it's very small, very fast and difficult to catch. But that's what the Seeker's got to do, because a game of Quidditch doesn't end until the Snitch has been caught. And whichever team Seeker gets the Snitch earns his team an extra 150 points. "And you're the Gryffindor Seeker, aren't you?"
said Colin in awe.
"Yes," said Harry, as they left the castle and started across the dew-drenched grass.
"And there's the Keeper, too. He guards the goalposts. And that's it, really." But Colin didn't stop questioning Harry all the way down the sloping lawns to the Quidditch field, and Harry only shook him off when he reached the changing rooms. Colin called after him in a piping voice,
"I'll go and get a good seat, Harry,"
and hurried off to the stands. The rest of the Gryffindor team were already in the changing room. Wood was the only person who looked truly awake. Fred and George Weasley were sitting, puffy-eyed and tousle-haired, next to 4th-year Alicia Spinett, who seemed to be nodding off against the wall behind her. Her fellow chasers, Katie Bell and Angelina Johnson, were yawning side by side opposite them.
"There you are, Harry. What kept you?" said Wood briskly.
"Now, I wanted a quick talk with you all before we actually get onto the field, because I spent the summer devising a whole new training program which I really think will make all the difference." Wood was holding up a large diagram of a Quidditch field, on which were drawn many lines, arrows, and crosses in different coloured inks. He took out his wand, tapped the board, and the arrows began to wiggle over the diagram like caterpillars. As Wood launched into a speech about his new tactics, Fred Weasley's head drooped right onto Alicia Spinett's shoulder, and he began to snore. The first board took nearly 20 minutes to explain, but there was another board under that, and a third under that one.
Harry sank into a stupor as Wood droned on and on.
So,
said Wood, at long last, jerking Harry from a wistful fantasy about what he could be eating for breakfast at this very moment up at the castle. Is that clear? Any questions? I've got a question, Oliver, said George, who had woken with a start. Why couldn't you have told us all this yesterday when we were awake? Wood wasn't pleased. Now listen here, you lot, he said, glowering at them all. We should have won the Quidditch Cup last year. We're easily the best team. But unfortunately, owing to circumstances beyond our control... Harry shifted guiltily in his seat. He had been unconscious in the hospital wing for the final match of the previous year, meaning that Gryffindor had been a player short and had suffered their worst defeat in 300 years. Wood took a moment to regain control of himself. Their last defeat was clearly still torturing him. So this year, we train harder than ever before, okay? Let's go and put our new theories into practice, Wood shouted, seizing his broomstick and leading the way out of the locker rooms. Stiff-legged and still yawning, his team followed. They had been in the locker room so long that the sun was up completely now, although remnants of mist hung over the grass in the stadium. As Harry walked onto the field, he saw Ron and Hermione sitting in the stands. "Aren't you finished yet?" called Ron incredulously.
"Haven't even started,"
said Harry, looking jealously at the toast and marmalade Ron and Hermione had brought out of the great hall. "Wood's been teaching us new moves." He mounted his broomstick and kicked at the ground, soaring up into the air. The cool morning air whipped his face, waking him far more effectively than Wood's long talk. It felt wonderful to be back on the Quidditch field. He soared right round the stadium at full speed, racing Fred and George. "What's that funny clicking noise?" called Fred as they hurtled around the corner. Harry looked into the stands. Colin was sitting in one of the highest seats, his camera raised, taking picture after picture, the sound strangely magnified in the deserted stadium.
"Look this way, Harry! This way!" he cried shrilly.
"Who's that?" said Fred.
"No idea,"
Harry lied, putting on a spurt of speed that took him as far away as possible from Colin. "What's going on?" said Wood, frowning as he skimmed through the air toward them.
"Why is that first year taking pictures? I don't like it. He could be a Slytherin spy, trying to find out about our new training program."
"He's in Gryffindor," said Harry quickly.
"And the Slytherins don't need a spy, Oliver," said George.
"What makes you say that?" said Wood testily.
"Because they're here in person," said George, pointing.
Several people in green robes were walking onto the field, broomsticks in their hands.
"I don't believe it," Wood hissed in outrage. "I booked the field for today. We'll see about this."
Wood shot toward the ground, landing rather harder than he meant to in his anger, staggering slightly as he dismounted. Harry, Fred, and George followed.
"Flint!"
Wood bellowed at the Slytherin captain.
"This is our practice time. We got up specially. You can clear off now."
Marcus Flint was even larger than Wood. He had a look of trollish cunning on his face as he replied,
"Plenty of room for all of us, Wood."
Angelina, Alicia, and Katie had come over too. There were no girls on the Slytherin team who stood shoulder to shoulder, facing the Gryffindors, leering to a man.
"But I booked the field," said Wood, positively spitting with rage. "I booked it."
"Ah," said Flint, "but I've got a specially signed note here from Professor Snape. I, Professor S. Snape, give the Slytherin team permission to practice today on the Quidditch field, owing to the need to train their new seeker."
"You've got a new seeker?" said Wood, distracted. "Where?"
And from behind the six large figures before them came a seventh smaller boy, smirking all over his pale, pointed face. It was Draco Malfoy.
"Aren't you Lucius Malfoy's son?"
said Fred, looking at Malfoy with dislike.
"Funny you should mention Draco's father," said Flint, as the whole Slytherin team smiled still more broadly. "Let me show you the generous gift he's made to the Slytherin team."
All seven of them held out their broomsticks. Seven highly polished, brand-new handles, and seven sets of fine gold lettering spelling the words Nimbus 2001 gleamed under the Gryffindors' noses in the early morning sun.
"Very latest model. Only came out last month,"
said Flint carelessly, flicking a speck of dust from the end of his own. I believe it outstrips the old 2000 series by a considerable amount. As for the old clean sweeps, he smiled nastily at Fred and George, who were both clutching clean sweep fives, sweeps the board with them. None of the Gryffindor team could think of anything to say for a moment. Malfoy was smirking so broadly his cold eyes were reduced to slits.
"Oh, look," said Flint, "a field invasion."
Ron and Hermione were crossing the grass to see what was going on.
"What's happening?" Ron asked Harry. "Why aren't you playing? And what's he doing here?"
He was looking at Malfoy, taking in his Slytherin Quidditch robes.
"I'm the new Slytherin Seeker, Weasley," said Malfoy smugly. "Everyone's just been admiring the brooms. My father's bought our team."
Ron gaped, open-mouthed, at the seven superb broomsticks in front of him.
"Good, aren't they?" said Malfoy smoothly. "But perhaps the Gryffindor team will be able to raise some gold and get new brooms, too. You could raffle off those clean sweep fives. Expect a museum would bid for them."
The Slytherin team howled with laughter.
"At least no one on the Gryffindor team had to buy their way in," said Hermione sharply. "They got in on pure talent."
The smug look on Malfoy's face flickered.
"No one asked your opinion, you filthy little mudblood," he spat.
Harry knew at once that Malfoy had said something really bad, because there was an instant uproar at his words. Flint had to dive in front of Malfoy to stop Fred and George jumping on him. Alicia shrieked, "How dare you!" And Ron plunged his hand into his robes, pulling out his wand, yelling, "You pay for that one, Malfoy!" and pointed it furiously under Flint's arm at Malfoy's face. A loud bang echoed round the stadium, and a jet of green light shot out of the wrong end of Ron's wand, hitting him in the stomach and sending him reeling backward onto the grass.
"Ron, Ron, are you all right?" squealed Hermione.
Ron opened his mouth to speak, but no words came out. Instead, he gave an almighty belch, and several slugs dribbled out of his mouth onto his lap. The Slytherin team were paralyzed with laughter. Flint was doubled up, hanging onto his new broomstick for support. Malfoy was on all fours, banging the ground with his fist. The Gryffindors were gathered round Ron, who kept belching large, glistening slugs. Nobody seemed to want to touch him.
"We'd better get him to Hagrid's, it's nearest," said Harry to Hermione, who nodded bravely, and the pair of them pulled Ron up by the arms.
"What happened, Harry? What happened? Is he ill? But you can cure him, can't you?"
Colin had run down from his seat and was now dancing alongside them as they left the field. Ron gave a huge heave, and more slugs dribbled down his front.
"Ooh," said Colin, fascinated and raising his camera. "Can you hold him still, Harry?"
"Get out of the way, Colin," said Harry angrily.
He and Hermione supported Ron out of the stadium and across the grounds toward the edge of the forest.
"Nearly there, Ron,"
said Hermione, as the gamekeeper's cabin came into view.
"You'll be all right in a minute. Almost there."
They were within 20 feet of Hagrid's house when the front door opened, but it wasn't Hagrid who emerged. Gilderoy Lockhart, wearing robes of palest mauve today, came striding out.
"Quick, behind here,"
Harry hissed, dragging Ron behind a nearby bush. Hermione followed, somewhat reluctantly.
"It's a simple matter, if you know what you're doing," Lockhart was saying loudly to Hagrid. "If you need help, you know where I am. I'll let you have a copy of my book. I'm surprised you haven't already got one. I'll sign one tonight and send it over. Well, goodbye."
And he strode away toward the castle. Harry waited until Lockhart was out of sight, then pulled Ron out of the bush and up to Hagrid's front door. They knocked urgently. Hagrid appeared at once, looking very grumpy, but his expression brightened when he saw who it was.
"Been wondering when you'd come to see me. Come in, come in. Thought you might have been Professor Lockhart back again."
Harry and Hermione supported Ron over the threshold into the one-room cabin, which had an enormous bed in one corner, a fire crackling merrily in the other. Hagrid didn't seem perturbed by Ron's slug problem, which Harry hastily explained as he lowered Ron into the chair.
"Better out than in," he said cheerfully, plunking a large copper basin in front of him. "Get 'em all up, Ron."
"I don't think there's anything to do except wait for it to stop,"
said Hermione anxiously, watching Ron bend over the basin.
That's a difficult curse to work at the best of times, but with a broken wand.
Hagrid was bustling around making them tea. His boarhound, Fang, was slobbering over Harry. What did Lockhart want with you, Hagrid? Harry asked, scratching Fang's ears.
Giving me advice on getting kelpies out of the well, growled Hagrid, moving a half-plucked rooster off his scrub table and setting down the teapot. Like I don't know, and banging on about some banshee he banished. If one word of it was true, I'll eat my kettle.
It was most unlike Hagrid to criticize a Hogwarts teacher, and Harry looked at him in surprise.
Hermione, however, said in a voice somewhat higher than usual, I think you're being a bit unfair. Professor Dumbledore obviously thought he was the best man for the job.
He was the only man for the job, said Hagrid, offering them a plate of treacle fudge, while Ron coughed squelchily into his basin. And I mean the only one. Getting very difficult to find anyone for the Dark Arts job. People aren't too keen to take it on, see? They're starting to think it's jinxed. No one's lasted long for a while now.
So, tell me, said Hagrid, jerking his head at Ron. Who was he trying to curse?
Malfoy called Hermione something. It must have been really bad, because everyone went wild.
It was bad, said Ron hoarsely, emerging over the tabletop, looking pale and sweaty. Malfoy called her Mudblood, Hagrid.
Ron dived out of sight again as a fresh wave of slugs made their appearance. Hagrid looked outraged.
He didn't, he growled at Hermione.
He did, she said, but I don't know what it means. I could tell it was really rude, of course.
It's about the most insulting thing he could think of, gasped Ron, coming back up. Mudblood's a really foul name for someone who is muggle-born. You know, non-magic parents. There are some wizards, like Malfoy's family, who think they're better than everyone else because they're what people call pure blood.
He gave a small burp, and a single slug fell into his outstretched hand. He threw it into the basin and continued,
I mean, the rest of us know it doesn't make any difference at all. Look at Neville Longbottom. He's pure blood, and he can hardly stand a cauldron the right way up. And they haven't invented a spell our Hermione can't do, said Hagrid proudly, making Hermione go a brilliant shade of magenta. It's a disgusting thing to call someone, said Ron, wiping his sweaty brow with a shaking hand. Dirty blood, see? Common blood. It's ridiculous. Most wizards these days are half-blood anyway. If we hadn't married muggles, we'd have died out.
He retched and ducked out of sight again.
Well, I don't blame you for trying to curse him, Ron, said Hagrid loudly over the thuds of more slugs hitting the basin. But maybe it was a good thing your wand backfired. Spec Lucius Malfoy would have come marching up to school if you'd cursed his son. Least you're not in trouble.
Harry would have pointed out that trouble didn't come much worse than having slugs pouring out of your mouth, but he couldn't. Hagrid's treacle fudge had cemented his jaws together.
Harry, said Hagrid abruptly, as though struck by a sudden thought. Got a bone to pick with you. I've heard you've been giving out signed photos. How come I haven't got one?
Furious, Harry wrenched his teeth apart. I have not been giving out signed photos, he said hotly. If Lockhart's still spreading that around... But then he saw that Hagrid was laughing.
I'm only joking, he said,
patting Harry genially on the back and sending him face first into the table.
I knew you hadn't really. I told Lockhart you didn't need to. You're more famous than him without trying.
Bet he didn't like that, said Harry, sitting up and rubbing his chin.
Don't think he did, said Hagrid, his eyes twinkling. And then I told him I'd never read one of his books, and he decided to go. Treacle fudge, Ron, he added as Ron reappeared.
No thanks, said Ron weakly. Better not risk it.
Come and see what I've been growing,
said Hagrid, as Harry and Hermione finished the last of their tea. In the small vegetable patch behind Hagrid's house were a dozen of the largest pumpkins Harry had ever seen. Each was the size of a large boulder.
Getting on well, aren't they? Said Hagrid happily. For the Halloween feast. Should be big enough by then.
What have you been feeding them? Said Harry. Hagrid looked over his shoulder to check that they were alone.
Well, I've been giving them, you know, a bit of help.
Harry noticed Hagrid's flowery pink umbrella leaning against the back wall of the cabin. Harry had had reason to believe before now that this umbrella was not all it looked. In fact, he had the strong impression that Hagrid's old school wand was concealed inside it. Hagrid wasn't supposed to use magic. He had been expelled from Hogwarts in his third year, but Harry had never found out why. Any mention of the matter, and Hagrid would clear his throat loudly and become mysteriously deaf.